Hello, I'm Preston Schlankover. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disasters might affect you and your community. This coronavirus situation is just one example of why we need community-based grassroots organizations to help our neighbors and communities when the next crisis hits. This week, we are speaking with Rich Breeden, a retired U.S. Air Force Special Agent with the Office of Special Investigations, or also known as OSI. Rich is a cybersecurity expert and has a couple of businesses in this field. Today, we will be discussing the reality of the cyber threats and what that really means to us. But first, I would also like to give a shout out to my editor and production manager, Brian Colburn at Sitch Radio, for making these podcasts sound so great and helping me stay on track. Brian edits and hosts my show on his platform at sitchradio.com. That's Sitch, S-I-T-C-H, radio.com. He also does all the things that I haven't learned how to do yet, like distributing my episodes to the various podcast apps. If you are considering starting a podcast, Brian has everything you need to get started and have a great show, like this one. Go to www.sitchradio.com and tell him Preston sent me. Let's welcome Rich to Civil Defense Radio. Welcome, Rich. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Yes, it's my pleasure. We've been missing each other for a while. You've been very, very busy in with your business and all the stuff that's going on around the world. So can you give us a quick update on your background and what makes you the expert in this field?
Well, like you said in the intro, 20 years in the Air Force, last 10 of that I did as a special agent. I've got 2 degrees from American Military University, an undergrad and a grad degree in intelligence studies and national security. I'm currently working on my doctorate dissertation. It's taking a little longer than I'd like, but I want to make sure I get it right so I can get the doctorate actually awarded to me. You mentioned my companies. I own probably the company that's really relevant to this podcast is my company, Cyber Safari. One of our customers is actually in the Pentagon, and that's the one that's keeping me very busy here lately, where we work in the electronics warfare research and technology development and understanding what those threats are and how we can mitigate those. So I look forward to talking a little bit about that today and answering whatever other questions you have.
Sounds great. Rich, you know, one of the questions that I have is, why is cyber such an issue in our country? Because for the most part, we've invented everything in the internet, all the operating systems, the computers, all this, we've developed it. So, you know, one of the things I haven't been able to find in the limited research that I've done on cyber really is why this is such a threat. Why are things not built more robust to where the threat is mitigated at manufacture?
Well, I think it's twofold. That's a very good question. I think it's twofold. I think, and like I said, with the projects that I've been involved with on everything from unclassified programs to very sensitive emerging technologies programs for the United States government, one of the things that I've seen for the 20, 30 years I've been doing this is security is really an afterthought. We're really quick to build a really good airframe or a computer system or electric grid, hardware that goes into electric grid. But where security is always last to the fight, and it's not really baked into the container, so to speak. So that's one of the problems that I see. And I think the only way we're going to change that is we just have to make security more focused as we're doing that development of a new hardware or new software, or whatever we're trying to develop. The second and probably the biggest one in my mind is it's a variety of systems, and all those systems are built primarily overseas. Very few components that go into like your computer or the iPhone that I'm talking to you on, you know, for this podcast is a lot of those parts are coming from all over the world, mainly the chips that were coming from China. And then what you'll see in that is, and I'm going to use some terms and I'll try to explain it for you. You'll see a lot of malware kind of baked in that. And that's where you've got malicious software that's designed at the code level, the ones and zeros that are designed to wreak havoc on a system at a given time. And those come in different varieties. That you got a virus that's purposely designed to corrupt or erase or modify. And that's, as you know, that could be very serious as well. One of the things that's really kind of played out, I guess, from that in my mind is the Ukrainian blackouts in 2015 and 2016. Uh-huh. That was actually ransomware that was done. And that's another form of malware, but that deliberately looks at and accessing files on a computer and holds the data hostage. And it does a lot of other things like that as well. And the virus that I'm talking about that, well, there's another one because especially with the healthcare situation we have today, there's the WannaCry ransomware that wreaked a lot of havoc in our hospital systems around the world. I think there was last report I think I read was 300,000 computers estimated that were attacked using the WannaCry ransomware in about 150 countries. With today's COVID situation, that really bothers me a lot that we haven't really been able to look at that at the code level, much less the hardware level.
Yeah, that that code level is a real problem. I'm part of a national organization that that looks at threats on our electrical grid, and one of the main things that we've really been looking at is the threats from backdoors in the chips that are in just about everything that's produced for our defense industry. You know, our fighters have a lot of chips in them, and there's backdoors in these chips that foreign entities have the ability to access or potentially have the ability to access. Our ships at sea, you know, our Navy ships with missile systems and things like that, the same type of threat. It's identified, it's known, it's unclassified. You know, if I know about it, I'm sure everybody in the Pentagon knows about it. So are we working to decrease that vulnerability in our weapon systems and our military hardware and our national hardware?
Yeah, I think it's basically what I would consider a two-front war. So from as we're developing new technologies and the research and testing and stuff that we do with new systems, new code and that kind of stuff, we are starting to see a lot more security being baked in, is a term I'll use, right there at design and testing and development of, you know, we'll call it code, speaking of ones and zeros. We are definitely seeing a lot more of that. I think you're going to start seeing with artificial intelligence, natural language processing, machine learning, you're going to start seeing systems become a little bit more resilient. Because I know in the environment that I work in daily, we're doing a really good job. We could do better, of course, but we're doing a really good job of doing that. But we're still, it's, and I guess the two-part war, that's one part. The second part of the war is we've got nation states, and it's no secret. I mean, it's all over the news, so we can talk about it as well. It was China and Russia. Yeah. The ransomware that I was talking about, or the Ukrainian blackouts, that was Russia.
Yeah.
I think that was a signal that they were really kind of sending, is like, hey, we can do this. And I think it's just an endless game between nation states as to who wants to be, you know, very aggressive. Russia used to be very stealthy, going back to my OSI days, and you kind of, it was more cloak and dagger, you know, even in cyberspace. Uh-huh. Now they've become a whole lot more aggressive. Ukraine, again, is that prime example. China has always been, you know, excuse my pun, you know, bull in the China shop, so to speak. Yeah. They just go in and they wreak havoc and they take whatever they can and they just stay very persistent within a system. I look at it on that side is attacks are going to become very pervasive, very organized as we go forward. A lot of them are, you know, looking to destabilize what we're trying to do, be it in the electric grid or our election system. I mean, we're in another election year, and there's already talks of, you know, is the elections at the ones and zero level? Are we going to be, you know, able to vote and our votes actually do count and not being hacked and that kind of deal? And I'm an optimist. I hope that we're okay. But again, it's all computer based. There, even if you use paper, you're still, you know, feeding that into a computer, yeah, a computer system that's very vulnerable to being changed at the code level as well. And then there's persistent espionage activities. I mean, every nation state, does it. They go out and they collect as much data as they can, and You can kind of, you know, deduce that from where you are. But there's a on the, I guess on the defensive front, there's an underworld, an undermarket, a black market, if you will, that they make a living on this. And I think as technology continues to grow, as we get into the fifth generation mobile networks, the 5G stuff, and we start doing a whole lot more of this, and we become more reliant on technology as a society. I mean, we're already there, but it's going to be even more pervasive, I guess, or persistent as we go forward. The risk is going to be there. The only safe computer system is one that's not plugged up to anything, but we don't live in an environment like that. So the best we can do is continue to understand where those threats are coming from. And I think we need to take more of a holistic approach to that. Some of the reports that I've read coming out of Congress, I'm trying to think of the one that really kind of just stood out at me, I guess it was in 2017, I believe. Dr. Graham released something for the commission to assess the threat of the United States to an EMP attack, electronic magnetic pulse attack.
Yeah.
Very good report, but I think one of the things that really comes from that can really show how we can mitigate that as well. And that is, there's no central authority or executive agent that really has cognizance over that across the board. Even as we're developing technologies, be it a weapon system, an airframe, the futuristic body armor for our warriors and stuff like that, everything still has a chip in it, but the chip is coming from all over the place. And there's no way within the supply chain structure to really kind of address that the way our system is currently at. And it's a problem that I think is not going to go away. We just got to figure a better way of kind of looking at that. And I think the fact that we're very fragmented, there's still a lot of inexperience within, especially across the board in commercial and in the government sector as well. And some of it, and people don't want to hear this, but we're really under-resourced in that. And it doesn't necessarily mean money, but it also means that we really got to start looking at people as a resource, and even the machine as a resource as well, and making sure that we make it as hardened as we possibly can.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you candidly about our critical electrical infrastructure. This may not be your forte, but generally, they're still very vulnerable, especially since these power companies, on average, they're receiving a million cyber hits a day. I talked to the guy in charge of the electrical power system in San Antonio, Texas, and he says over a million hits a day, easy. So, What is the answer for that? Does it dovetail with the defense industry as well?
Yeah, I think it does. And I think that's a very, I think it's a low number. I actually think it's probably on a daily basis, especially in times like we're in now, with a lot of us are teleworking and kind of staying in and making sure we don't catch this virus that's going around. So in these other little chaotic times is when you really see a lot of cyber activity kind of ramp up, and they really test what they can really do. You name the actor, they're going to go after that. So the EMP stuff isn't necessarily my forte. I know a little bit about it from some of the programs I've worked on in the past, but I would consider this probably right up there with healthcare and making sure we get our healthcare, especially on the cyber side. These are two real national security issues that, even though we're in a situation we're in today, we really need to take a look at really, really hard, because the EMP threat isn't just coming from some hacker in name of foreign country who hops around different computer systems and eventually gets into the grid. It could also come from nature as well. I mean, a solar flare that comes by could just as easily take out our satellites and a bunch of stuff like that. And then we're not very well position for something like something to that magnitude. I would really consider that something that's very vulnerable, very very much a threat, and the vulnerability isn't just inviting an attack. It's just a matter of when. And I think going back again to Ukraine, I think that was the signal. And again, I really firmly believe that that was the signal by Russia saying, we can do this. We can talk about it all day long. And I guess the other thing too, is we often look at, and this is kind of my frustration a little bit. Everybody looks at cyber, you know, because it's this big ominous word that we is now embedded in everything we do, but it's often cyber activities like hacking into a, you know, a grid system or into a server that's in, you know, controlling the grid system as this mythical futuristic kind of thing. When in fact, again, and I think the million plus attacks really kind of prove my point. Nation states are systematically conducting cyber operations daily to the point where they are going to do anything and everything they can to the grid. And it may, I don't have to necessarily go to the power company and take out their servers and or make them do something that's not supposed to happen. Right. Stuxnet is another, you know, example that's out there in the public of, you know, what can be done to stop a nuclear power plant from doing what it's supposed to do.
Right.
I can really do is take out the wireless connection. I can take out anything else that touches that. So it's a cascading effect that we need to start paying a little bit more attention to as well, and understanding, you know, every system that touches that electric station, power station, for instance, and then what the vulnerabilities to those are, and then how we can mitigate those. That's kind of what I see from some of the stuff that I've been involved in.
Yeah, that mitigate or the cascading effect from even something as simple as cutting out the cellular signal is very catastrophic.
Very much.
Yeah.
Because again, you don't know. I mean, it could be as simple as, for instance, hypothetical. I work at a power company here in Virginia, and I go to work and I'm carrying my iPad that the company gave me to keep notes on. But that iPad could have been hacked. And once it goes into the wireless system that when I walk into the door to my plant, then it can take over and you know, persist within that as well. The other thing too is a lot of times these hackers or the code, it's there, and this is waiting for the right time for that, you know, switch to be flipped on, and then it does whatever it needs to do. And it could be something just as what we would consider, I guess, kind of trivial, I guess, not to undermine this, but is if I slow down the generator speed a little bit, you know, a couple RPMs every, you know, hour or so, and then speed it up at night when nobody's paying attention. It's just a little fluctuation, and that anomaly, if somebody's not really watching that in the power station, that could be enough to really kind of make that system break before it's supposed to. So, I mean, there's a whole lot of things that could really play into this, and we've just become very much complacent into, complacent in the fact of I can come home, turn on a light switch, and the lights are going to be on. Right. Mm-hmm. So until we start taking this a little bit more seriously, I think you there's the potential there for more blackouts. There's the potential there for, I guess, and the stuff that kind of goes with that. So and it doesn't have to necessarily be in the power grids. I mean, I can mess with the financial systems. You know, look again at where we are today. Everything is shut down pretty much while we're trying to fight this COVID virus. And this is a, you know, prime example on a little bit of a scale of what could happen if we lose part of, you know, the society in which we live in today, be it banking. Not that I had planned to talk about this, but with today's environment, the hospital stuff really bothers me as well, because if I got into that system with patients that are coming in, be it with COVID, a heart attack or whatever, and I really wanted to take that person and make them more ill or something worse, kill them. All I had to do is just, you know, wait for that person to show up in the hospital and then make sure that they don't get the meds, change one, you know, one digit in their prescription, and then everything kind of changes. So there's a lot of stuff there. But again, the person, you'd have to have really good intelligence in order for that hypothetical to work out, to know that, you know, I showed up at the hospital with a heart ailment and somebody really wanted to take me out kind of deal. But
right.
With social media and everything, a lot of people share a lot of information. So it's very easy to kind of see where and what people are up to.
Yeah. I'm glad that you mentioned the report from the EMP Commission. And anybody who's listening wants to research that a little bit, I'm going to put a link in the show notes for that. But also, you can go there now after this episode's done. It's firstempcommission.org, firstempcommission.org. All of their reports from the very first to the last are there. And there's a lot of great information there, and some of it will probably make you want to start a civil defense organization and make sure that your neighborhood and community is working together. The threat of EMP is, in my book, the most dramatic because it wipes out so much of our infrastructure. You know, it takes out the power grid, takes out most everything that's electronic, whereas a solar flare, it just fries everything that's plugged into the grid. So it's right. Not quite as bad. But, you know, this COVID-19 pandemic has the ability to be just as bad as a solar flare by taking out a lot of our infrastructure just because it shuts down and people get sick, people are afraid to go to work, so they call in sick. Absenteeism is a huge problem during times like this. We saw that in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. That's really a huge threat. And once the veneer of civility that we have in our nation is dropped, then that thing's hard to put back in the bottle.
Yeah. Most definitely. And I think especially with what we're living with today, it's going to be really kind of hard to jumpstart the economy that way as well. Banking, everybody is taking a really big hit here while we try to combat this virus. And then you got to look at it from both sides of this. Me being a former intelligence guy and a counterintelligence officer, I kind of look at this with a little bit of, yeah, was there some malice there? And if it was malice, then what do you do from that regard? Yeah. And it's the same thing even on the cyber side. Intelligence is the name of the game, or data is the name of the game.
Yes.
Looking at a power grid going down and then coming back and doing the forensics and trying to figure out what happened to reconstruct that. Or in this case, I think while we're dealing with this and we've got a lot of people sick, I've got a very personal friend of mine who's in the hospital right now trying to get well from what's going on. But if you look at where this thing originated from, how it originated and outcomes, and there's a lot of stuff you can read out there, and I don't want to get too much into that because that's not what the show's about. But if you look at how you can, again, those cascading effects, this thing has rippled really fast.
Yes.
And I think we're not done with the ripples, hitting the beach, so to speak.
Right.
So if you put that back into, in a cyber attack, you see those same kind of ripples.
Yes.
And like anything else, there are warning signs that I think, to go back to your question, one of your questions as well, I think we need to do a better job of understanding what those early warning signs are. And then I'll throw my military, hat back on, but knowing what those threats are, knowing who is, conducting those activities, and then knowing what I have in my arsenal to actually go back and say, this is how I can stop that cyber attack at my power station. This is how I can stop the power attack against banking or the hospital or whatever the case may be. And that's why, again, going back to that report, which I found, and I'll give a huge thumbs up to this administration. They actually decided to do something about it. And before the COVID stuff hit, I think they were moving in some of the right directions. But I think the big thing to take away from that report is you need to have a body that's overlooking EMP, what's going on to our grid. Part of the problem, I think, as well is you've got every state, every locality, different way they hook into the grid. I mean, it's a colossal mess that has been hodgepodge together over the years. And a lot of it too has not been updated with the latest, greatest technologies either. So I think how we can, because I've been thinking of your question, how we can come back and help reduce the risk. I don't think you ever get rid of the risk, but you can definitely reduce the risk if we start insisting a little bit more of let's build the hardware, let's build the server, let's start building that stuff here in country, and then start looking at and putting those parameters in there as well. As long as you're connected to the internet, you're still going to have that piece, but then you can minimize the battlefield or shrink the battlefield a little bit for those who are wishing to do the United States and all of us harm.
Yes. Now, we got a couple minutes left in just that time. Can you tell us what keeps you awake at night?
Well, I think we've been talking a lot about it. What keeps me up a lot is the amount of information that's really out there and what, you know, a person with some malice intent, what they could really do with that. I think if you want to figure out how to hack into a system or understand what's going on, there's a black market that does, you know, you can find just whatever the heck you want in that. And we've got a lot of good intelligence people on the front lines that are, you know, keeping track of that all the time and making sure that not too much stuff gets out there or whatever the heck they need to do to mitigate the threats there. But I'll just bring it home with today's COVID stuff. What really concerns me is, would there be a cyber attack on our medical infrastructure, especially since we are dealing with what we're dealing with here? And I think you nailed it. I think if I really wanted to do that, I don't necessarily have to hit something within the medical field itself or one of the hospitals, just take out the power. So I think those two combined really keep me up at night. And I know that some of the projects that my company is supporting for our DoD clients, we've got a really good plan, I think, of how, and we're building some tools, I think, that would add to our Department of Defense that should be able to help mitigate some of these, I hope, in the very near future, once we can prove some concepts and use some of the latest technologies, like I said earlier, with artificial intelligence, natural language processing and machine learning and that stuff to help to do that. Because there's so much data out there. Not even if I had the best intelligence analyst in the world and I had hundreds of them, I still wouldn't be able to find that one in the cyber business. It's like looking for needles in a stack of needles, right? So I wouldn't be able to find the one needle that I really cared about. So it's always that one thing out there that I could miss. And then, you know, I can't stop the attack. So those are the things that really keep me up at night. And I'm very proud to say that, my company is helping kind of on the front lines and the research and development of some stuff that I think will be good to help the country here in the next couple, hopefully months, if we can build this thing fast enough.
Great. Great. That's good to know. Well, civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based, grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings of the threats we see on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. And also, I wish to thank Rich for being on the show today, and I also like to thank you, our friends and listeners, who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.